Our next case this morning is Rumpke Sanitary Landfill versus Ohio and Colerain Township. Mr. Miller? I'm sorry, Ms. Cunningham.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And you're standing and showing me that you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, I'm Catherine Cunningham. I am one of the attorneys for Colerain Township and its trustees. With me at council table is my co-counsel, James Reuter, who is also the law director for Colerain Township. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal in this case. The question in this case is whether Rumpke Sanitary Landfill, who had sued Colerain Township and had pending litigation that involved the construction of Ohio Revised Code Section 519-211, could bring a separate and independent declaratory judgment action while that case was pending, challenging the constitutionality of an amendment that the General Assembly made to 519-211 before it became effective, naming as the only defendant in that second case the state of Ohio, and specifically excluding and opposing Colerain Township as a party to that action. It's Colerain Township's position that Colerain Township was a jurisdictionally necessary party in the second declaratory judgment action challenging the constitutionality of the amendment of 519-211, and that they were required to be added as a party at the trial court level. By failing to add the Colerain Township as a party, both the judgment of the trial court and the judgment of the Court of Appeals is void because neither court had jurisdiction over the case. There are four critical factors in this case. One is that there was pending litigation between Rumpke Sanitary Landfill and Colerain Township. That's critical for a couple of reasons. One, that litigation involved the very statute at question in the constitutional issue. Second, it is that litigation that Rumpke Sanitary Landfill relied on in the second case to tell the court that it had standing, a justiciable controversy, and would be irreparably harmed if the constitutional challenge was not granted before the law became effective. According to Rumpke Sanitary Landfill, if the law becomes effective, Colerain Township may have an interest, so we need to name only the state of Ohio, have the Attorney General defend them, and get the law enjoined from becoming effective before Colerain Township can get an interest in this case.
Counsel, this statute had been enacted by the General Assembly, signed by the governor, and it was only waiting for its effective date. Is that my understanding of the fact situation?
That is correct, Your Honor. The facts in this case were that the bill was amended by the General Assembly on June 10th of 2008. On June 24th of 2008, the governor signed the bill.
It was part of the biennial budget bill?
As part of the biennial capital appropriations
capital
bill, absolutely.
Appropriations.
And then the law was to become effective 90 days after that, September 24th.
If the sole issue in the second piece of litigation was whether it violated the single subject rule, why was the interest of the state in defending the statute not aligned with your interests?
For two reasons, Your Honor. One is that the claimed interest of Colerain Township and of Rumpke Sanitary Landfill was their interest as party litigants in a different case. The state was not a party to that case. The constitutional issue was not raised in that case, and the case was not amended to include the state. So it was litigating parties' interests in pending litigation in a different case that gave rise to standing, and the case wasn't the state didn't have a dog in that fight.
But the state's obligation was to defend the constitutionality of the statute and to argue that it was not a single subject. And that was really the sole issue that they were looking at. And why would that not be the same position that your client would have taken?
Again, for a couple of reasons. One, it's the state's opportunity to defend. The Attorney General is named as a party. They can choose to participate or not. They did choose to participate in this case. But number two, this case involved the determination of whether or not a statutory amendment to a statute that affected the legal rights and interests of the powers, the jurisdictional powers and authorities of a township and local zoning, and the enforcement ability against public utilities for that local zoning. That's the statute that was being questioned. The issue in the single subject case is whether or not that statute has a sufficient nexus to all the other things that are going on in that case to tie into the case.
Would you have argued the case differently than the state of Ohio did
We would have made some of the same arguments, and we do have different arguments than the state in that case. In addition...
Well, counsel, let me back you up. It's the second action that you're complaining about, that you
yes.
weren't in. All right. The appellee, Rumpke, wants to challenge the statute, a constitutional challenge on the statute.
Yes.
If they brought that, Moon County or wherever they brought it, and didn't name the state of Ohio and only named your township, what would happen?
It would have been a jurisdictional defect, and they would have had to have named the state
of Ohio. They had to name the state.
They had to name the state.
Absolutely. They didn't have to name you.
We believe they did have to name us under the declaratory judgment statute because we were a jurisdictionally necessary party, because under the declaratory judgment statute, the statute says all persons who have or claim any interest that would be affected are required.
Well, then they would have to name every township in the state.
Mm-hmm. Every township in the state wasn't in litigation over their zoning power on an existing landfill.
This was a challenge to the single subject provision, violation of that.
Yes.
The statute they were challenging bears implication on every local government, I assume, township and city and perhaps county in the state. So under your theory, they'd have to name them all, wouldn't they?
No, Your Honor. Under our theory, we have a twofold interest. Number one, we are a party in pending litigation, which is the very basis that Rumpke claimed created a case in controversy for them. They didn't claim a general interest in the process of the General Assembly. They claimed an actual case in controversy based on pending litigation with Coleraine Township. They're the ones who put that issue, claimed standing on that issue, not the township. We were defending that claim. Secondly, every township in Ohio doesn't have a sanitary landfill within its jurisdiction. Some may not.
Well, but they could in the future.
They could in the future. And third, appellant, we could find no case in the state in which the only defendant named was the state of Ohio. In all, virtually every case, even under a single subject challenge, the named party defendant may be the state of Ohio, but it also includes the local government, the political subdivision, who has the enforcement authority or whose powers and authorities are being
and
challenged.
And that was a discretionary inclusion. That wasn't a statutory inclusion of these other entities, correct?
They were not that, Your Honor, I don't know. That wasn't an issue necessarily in the case. None of those cases involved who was a necessary party. All of those cases included
But there's
that.
Nothing in the statute that would, that compares or comports with the naming of the state of Ohio in this as a necessary party or mandatory party.
The statute has two requirements. Number one, that you name necessary parties. Number two, separate and distinct from who a necessary party is, that you name the state of Ohio.
Okay.
It doesn't make the state of Ohio the necessary party, the only necessary party. It includes, number one, the state, and number two, the necessary parties.
Okay, but it is feasible that the state of Ohio is sufficient under certain circumstances. Would you agree with that?
I can't think of any circumstances, but it may be possible. Yeah. I don't know how a plaintiff would have a justiciable claim and a real case in controversy against just the General Assembly without having some type of law being enforced, to be enforced against them.
Thank you. Let me ask you another part of that question. Do you dispute that Rumpke had standing to bring this action?
Well, we weren't permitted to dispute it because we were never allowed to be in the case. Our argument is if Rumpke has standing to bring the action, because it has litigation pending with Colerain Township,
mm-hmm.
then Colerain Township is a necessary party in that because they're the adverse party with the opposite interest. If that's the basis of their standing, then Colerain Township's a necessary party.
And Colerain Township was not named, nor served, nor apprised of this legal action. Is that correct?
Not of the case
second,
before this
the second
court.
Case.
That's correct.
So when did you find out about it?
We found out about it within a week of when it was filed. We sought to intervene 9 days after it was filed.
Okay.
Do you have, as a secondary matter, do you have the argument that you would have been a permitted party under the statute, a party permitted to intervene?
Under both the statute, we believe that under both the statute and the civil rules, that we were a necessary party to the lawsuit and should have been permitted to intervene. And
so when you did raise the abuse of discretion as well?
We did raise the abuse of discretion under the civil rules by failing to let us intervene. Mm-hmm. We also alleged as part of that and the state admitted that our interests were not aligned. The Colerain Township had separate and distinct interests, local interests relating to their zoning powers and authority and enforcement that the state did not have. The state filed a motion to dismiss in the trial court and argued in the Court of Appeals that we were a necessary and indispensable party jurisdictionally required under the statute. And also, the remedy sought by Rumke in this case was an injunction against the effectiveness of a law. Both Colerain Township and the state argued below that, number one, you can't enjoin a law from becoming effective, and two, any injunction against the state of Ohio would not necessarily restrain or enjoin Colerain Township, that what they were really seeking to do was stop Colerain Township from its zoning enforcement on the landfill, so that they were absolutely a necessary and indispensable party because the judgment in the case could not and should not affect them.
Was this law that was piggybacked into the capital improvements bill? Is that what you said?
It was the biennial capital appropriations budget.
Yeah. Was this something that your client, Colerain Township, asked some legislator to enact in order to affect the outcome of the pending litigation?
Your Honor, I am not aware that that's true, and there's nothing in the record that says
well,
that.
Well, now, come on.
I don't know that to be true.
Do you know that not to be true?
I don't know that not to be true.
Would that be a reasonable assumption on my part?
Well, I think the law prohibits us from assuming why legislators act.
We do those things every day.
As it relates to the entirety of the General Assembly, but not individual.
Okay.
Members.
Council, did any other township seek to intervene in this case?
No.
To your knowledge. So we don't have the issue of whether other townships might be involved in this if we're talking about intervention as of right, because they'd have to ask to intervene, or permissive intervention.
No other townships sought to intervene. I don't know that any other townships knew about the pending litigation.
Let me ask you this. The declaratory judgment statute also has this provision. In any action or proceeding that involves the validity of a township resolution, the township shall be made a party and shall be heard. Now, I understand the direct issue was the validity of a state statute, but the validity of the state statute would affect the validity of the township zoning resolution, would it not?
Without question.
Or am I missing something here?
Without question. The township zoning resolution regulated landfills. There's no question about that, and had regulated Rumke Sanitary Landfill since the inception of zoning in Colerain Township and local zoning in the county. So the township had been and the county had been regulating the landfill under their local zoning since its adoption. That zoning ordinance in and of itself was not an issue. The issue was whether or not Rumke Sanitary Landfill could qualify as a public utility and exempt itself from that statute.
So maybe it doesn't involve the validity of the township resolution, but the application of the township. Is that
absolutely, which is why the enforcing authority needs to be a party.
This is a very interesting discussion, but the only legal issue before us is whether or not Colerain Township is an interested party under the statute as defined. Do I have that correct? Because we only took one proposition of law?
You only took one proposition of law, and it's under the statute or in the alternative under the civil rules. Yes, Your Honor.
Under the rules. And once we make that determination, if we decide that they were, what do we do with the case in terms of disposition should we find your position is well taken?
Well, the disposition of the case, if there was a jurisdictional defect as to parties, the case must be the cases below would be void.
We would remand it to the trial court for further proceedings in connection with that.
You remanded it to the trial court, they would have to amend. They would have to amend to include.
What relief are you asking?
We're asking that it be that the decision be void. If they want to challenge a statute, they can refile.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Miller?
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, I'm going to begin by answering Justice O'Donnell's last question, which is what you do with this case is you dismiss it in the event that they're correct. And the reason you dismiss this case is because the appellant here has argued the very merits that they wish to re-argue below in the public utility case. I'm going to refer to the case about whether Rumke is a public utility against Coleraine Township.
You've lost me as to why we dismiss it. If we find that they were a necessary party, how does that result in the dismissal of the case?
Because the actual issue of – because they cannot go down and re-argue the issue because the public utility case is res judicata to this one. In the public utility case, the township filed a motion for summary judgment saying that the revised statute, as revised by House Bill 562 – and by the way, it's House Bill 562 that we challenged. We didn't challenge the revised code provision. But the statute, as revised by House Bill 562, was applicable to our client, Rumke, and precluded Rumke from being considered a public utility. The judge in that case ruled against them and granted summary judgment to us. That case is on appeal right now to the First District.
Based on the old statute or the new one?
He found that it has to be based upon the old statute. He had to find that the new statute didn't apply because the new statute was targeted at Rumke to say that we could not be a public utility. And so if they're able to go back down, they cannot re-argue the merits of the case that the state lost because they've lost the same issue as well.
In that public utilities case, did the judge rely upon the decision in this case to make the determination that it was a public utility or was not, whichever one it was?
Whether the judge took this case as guidance in his decision, I cannot say. What I can say is the record is that the issue was briefed to him separately. The township argued that he should consider it. They submitted our briefs as well as theirs from the other case.
But if it goes back down and we said they would be a necessary party, correct, then that case is reopened and they have the ability to defend the single subject. And if that they are successful and the court finds there was no single subject, now the new statute would apply to your client, would it not?
Well, Your Honor, I submit that they do not have the ability to re-argue the issue below because they argued it already in the public utility case.
But the law has changed. So do they bring just a new suit now under the new law against you because the law has changed?
Well, Your Honor, they argued the validity of the new law, and they lost that in that case.
So your position is because Rumke tried to expand its landfill, and Coleraine said you may not, and Rumke argued it doesn't apply to us because we're a public utility and there's an exception. And that issue has already been litigated, and Rumke won and Coleraine lost. Is that what you're telling us?
Yes, Your Honor. And in that issue
– So, therefore, this case is really sort of an adjunct. Whether they should or should not have been a necessary party, the issue has already been decided.
That is correct.
How does exempting Coleraine from a participation in the proceeding where the ultimate issue was already decided sound in fairness?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not here today to speak to fairness. I'm here today to speak to the law. As the law reads, the question of whether an entity is a necessary party is whether they have a legal interest. The question that was at stake here was whether House Bill 562, a legislative enactment by the General Assembly, it was a capital appropriations bill that was 919 pages, that included in it a line that amended a statute, was a capital appropriations. That was the question. And the question of whether a legislative enactment by the General Assembly is a capital appropriations is of no concern to a township.
Well, that's not entirely true, either from a legal or practical matter, is it, Mr. Miller? Because the answer to that question depends upon whether or not they can enforce their zoning ordinance.
But, Your Honor,
it's a direct connection. It's not, you know, speculative. It's a very direct connection.
Your Honor, the connection in this case is no more direct than the connection in the Dayton Metro Housing Authority case, in which it was decided that a litigant should not be party to a case determining whether the administrative agency in which she was litigating had authority to hear that matter. And the reason I say that, Your Honor, is because, you know, it is indirect, because the question here, as counsel conceded, is not whether the zoning resolution is valid. The zoning resolution stands regardless for non-public utilities. The question the law that was amended here by the bill that we're challenging the bill, is a statute that sets forth the parameters zoning that are enforced against a township when it chooses to adopt a zoning. The statute here reads, "No township shall." And the township wants to argue that it is the enforcing agency of a statute that reads, "No township shall." That's not true. This case is more like the single subject case of the Ohio Catamelia Trial Lawyers versus Shewhart, in which the laws that were being challenged there really had no direct enforcing state agency. And so in that event, they sued the state of Ohio. They also named judges. Shewhart was a judge. And there was a separate opinion in that case by Chief Justice Moyer, which said you really don't need to name a judge as an enforcing party for one of these things. You just, you name the legislature, and that's enough. And that's exactly what we did here. And, you know, turning to the question of alignment of interest, the township argues that it would have argued differently. Well, in fact, we know it didn't argue differently, because it argued the merits on appeal to the First District, and the arguments that it set forth there were identical to the arguments that were set forth by the state. Moreover, the question of alignment of interest is not, do they have some sort of interest that's slightly different? It's, do they have opposing interests? Do they have competing interests?
Was that appellate court determination appealed to this court by the state?
The state wisely selected not to appeal that decision, because there's a lot of longstanding precedent from this court, and I can go through them.
Probably well-written opinions if they're from this court.
Absolutely,
right?
Your Honor.
Log rolling and the whole – I understand that by
right,
you.
Right, Your Honor. So,
but
so because
but I wonder, had Coleraine Township been a party, whether it would have appealed. I guess we don't know the answer to that question.
Well, Your Honor, I, in all fairness to the opposing side, I'll say, you know, if they were a party, they would have appealed, because they did appeal here when they were trying to become a party.
But based on our great precedent, we wouldn't have taken the case. That's your answer.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And the state was aware of that, and the state did not want more negative precedent from this court on this issue.
How does you having standing, because you had a justiciable issue, deny them standing on the very same case? I'm having
our
a hard time understanding that argument.
Okay, and that gets to the fairness point, and I will address that now. First of all, our standing was not based upon the fact that we had a case. Our standing was based upon the fact that we're a landfill. What we based the case upon, the existence of the legislation or of the pending case on, we used that to articulate to the court the need for us to have our case heard quickly and timely.
But your landfill status was being challenged as a public utility, and that was the whole basis of why you were objecting to the statute.
Yes, but that's not standing. Now, to the fairness question of why can we present ourselves in the court and not have someone else there who has a divergent interest, any time that there's a legislation that's passed that, you know, that there are competing interests in, you don't go out and you sue the competing lobbying entity to say, oh, they won, or, you know, this is going to be favorable to them. You know, this is a case where we're challenging, you challenge the law as a means that you need to challenge it. And so the law here is that it's an enactment by the legislature. It's a General Assembly enactment, so we have to sue them.
Well, counsel, when I asked the question of opposing counsel about the state being obviously a statutory party, and are there any other actions where they were the only party in this type of a — and she couldn't think of any examples that wouldn't have included a necessary party, however that party was or whatever that party might be. What's your response to that, where the state is sufficient? When you're challenging the one-subject rule, is it always going to be just the state of Ohio that is a party to the action?
Your Honor, I think that it is important to always have the state of Ohio as a party.
It's statutory. It is important.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, the question of whether in some other instances you may need to have other entities — I do acknowledge that there is some precedent out there that indicates that when you're challenging the constitutionality of a statute, that you need to also include the enforcing agency. Now, that's enforcing agency of the state, you know, if there's a state agency that's enforcing a particular statute. And again, that's substantive. That's not law dealing with a single subject challenge, because in a single subject challenge is not a challenge to the substance of the law. It's a challenge to the legislative process. Mm-hmm. And also here, the township is not an enforcing agency of the statute, because the statute is in fact enforced against the statute. We use the statute in the public utility case to argue that the township does not have authority. You know, it was a statute that says that no township shall.
And a township doesn't have a right to be involved when you're questioning whether or not they have authority to do something that is essentially pending against the
if we are challenging the
a target of the authority?
If we are challenging the direct authority of, or if we're challenging the a zoning resolution that's passed, directly challenging a zoning resolution that's passed by a township, then they are a necessary party, and that's who we sue. But in this instance, the interest of the township was aligned with the state, and as Justice Pfeiffer indicated earlier, we'd have to name all, you know, 1,308 townships and all 88 counties to this suit if we were going to say that any township and any county that was going to be affected by this.
Well, Mr. Miller,
party.
What was the strategy or the reason for you could have left them come in without objection? Why did you want to keep them out? Because they do have to argue the same thing, don't they? That this is a single subject challenge, and talking about the merits.
Your Honor, their argument. Yeah, you're correct, Your Honor. Their argument was duplicative of the state, and you know them standing up there making the same argument would not be of any harm to our position. We still would have won.
That's correct. Not the basis on which we exclude necessary parties, because they make a duplicative argument. Not the legal standard.
Your Honor, if there's alignment of interest, that is a standard. And their interest was aligned because they were taking the same legal position. That is an alignment of legal interest.
That's a basis to exclude another party that's a necessary party or a party that has an interest is because they're aligned, so we won't let them in?
Yes, Your Honor. That is.
What's your authority on that one?
I will pull that one up for you here because I believe I have it. I know it's in our briefing. I thought that I wrote that down here. I've got Dispatch Printing Company, we cite in our brief, and also NRA Reedner, which was an adoption case. Those stated that.
Yeah, Mr. Merrill, let me go back to Justice Pfeiffer's question. If the interests are duplicative, if they're not going to, if you don't think they're going to add anything, then why not let them in the interest of fairness?
Your Honor, we were happy to let them in. Had they agreed to allow the case proceed on our timetable. But they filed a lot of motions to get this case slowed down, and they wanted it transferred to the other court. We offered to allow them to argue the merits of this when we had the hearing in front of the trial court, and they declined that. So we were doing what we could to facilitate their participation, be it officially as a party or
so,
not.
So they were trying your rules, on your conditions.
Well, on
you're doing what you could to let them participate, but only on your conditions, with respect to timetable and things like that.
With respect to a timetable that was agreed by the parties, the state agreed to the party to the timetable. This was a hearing that was set by agreement with the state. So it was, and the court. So it was not our timetable. It was a timetable.
So if they came in, they wanted to slow walk the case. I'm interested. Do you have any idea who put this amendment into the Capitol bill?
Your Honor, in our complaint, we allege that that Lou Blessing slipped this in. That's the allegation.
It wasn't that hard to discover, was it?
Your Honor, that was not.
All right,
Mr. Miller, if at some point Colerain Township was a little farther down the road with this proposal, because you challenged it pretty quickly after it was enacted by the legislature, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right. And had it gone down the road a little bit and Colerain had then relied on it once it had become effective, they would have been a necessary party, correct?
Your Honor, had they, had the statute become effective, had they altered their zoning resolution and adopted a new zoning resolution based upon the statute, then Rumpke's sanitary landfill is located in that township, then we would, I agree, have to challenge that zoning ordinance. But because here, they had not taken any action because the statute wasn't effective, they had not enacted any law that there was for us to challenge on that.
Okay. So, but you agree that at some point later in time, they would have been, had they reacted to this statute, once it became effective, they would have had standing.
Your Honor, I agree that if they adopted a zoning resolution, if they adopted a law that said, that was based upon this,
yes,
we would have to challenge, we'd have had to challenge that zoning resolution in addition to the House bill that we challenged.
And the House bill
violation
could have been challenged after it became effective. As the single subject violation, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. You just acted in all due haste here
Your Honor, we thought it best to stop the log from rolling further than necessary with the log rolling that was occurring here. I apologize for using all of my co-counsel and my partner, Joe Trout's time. But with that, I will be seated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Ms. Cunningham, 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Your Honors, what happened here was a shell game. Rumpke Sanitary Landfill sued Colerain Township. Under its existing zoning said, you can't apply it to us. You've got zoning that regulates landfills. We've been regulated for 40 years, but you can't regulate us anymore. Then Rumpke Sanitary Landfill filed case number 2, excluding Colerain Township, saying, oh, the legislature amended the statute, making it clear that you can regulate us, and our theory under the old statute no longer is viable in our pending litigation. Therefore, we need that declared unconstitutional before it could possibly become effective because it might hurt us in this pending litigation. They accomplished that without Colerain. Over Colerain's objection, it's disingenuous to say we'd let him in at the last minute. They opposed Colerain all the way in that case, except an offhanded comment after the merits were argued in full, saying, oh, and if they want to stand up and argue the merits now, go ahead.
Well, counsel, this is not the first time that this pony has been trotted out, and I'm troubled by it every time it happens, and that is legislation introduced and passed to affect pending litigation, and that's what this was.
Well, Your Honor, that goes to the merits of the constitutionality of the single subject rule, but we would argue that's not what this was. There was other legislation. The windmill legislation on public utilities was also included in the biennial capital appropriations bill. There were biennial capital appropriations.
Lots of other things get in a capital bill, but I'm talking about specifically when some legislator, we've seen it out of the Hamilton County area before. I think on the drug involving abortions, for example, there's litigation underway, and boom, somebody puts in a bill to change the rules of the game while the litigation is underway. Now, that just is troubling, I think.
Well, Your Honor, Coleraine Township never had the right to argue about that because they were excluded in this case from the beginning, even though by the admission of the State Attorney General and Coleraine Township, their interests were not aligned. They had separate and distinct interests. And under the declaratory judgment statute, we believe that they were a jurisdictionally necessary party.
Assuming for purposes of argument that the court agrees with your argument that you should have been included, considering the other case out there, if we reverse and remand, what happens?
Your Honor, that is a troubling question, and that's why I started out with the discussion about why I thought this was a shell game, because in case number two, where it was declared unconstitutional, Coleraine Township was prohibited, that was decided quickly at the insistence of Rumke. Then in case number one, where we're arguing the merits of 519-11, we filed a motion for summary judgment saying the statute had been changed. Rumke Sanitary Landfill filed the only response to that was, no, the statute's been declared unconstitutional and enjoined. Therefore, it doesn't apply in this case. There was no legal argument. There was no discussion on the merits of that by the trial court. Nothing else occurred. And the trial court granted, without discussion, Rumke Sanitary Landfill's motion for summary judgment, which is before the Court of Appeals, finding them on questions of fact under the former law that they were a public utility, and dismissed, overruled, Coleraine Township's motion for summary judgment on the application of the new law without comment, just summarily overruled it. There was no discussion, no independent finding, no legal analysis by the court on the amendment to the statute. The court used the argument of the only argument made was they were enjoined. They used the case number two in case number one, and it applied it against Coleraine, which is exactly what Coleraine said would happen and exactly what did happen.
But wasn't the legislation that was being passed going to be used in case number one by Coleraine?
That's what happened in the motion for summary judgment. Case number one was the real case in controversy.
I understand that. And
it's
so
where
then,
it should have been litigated.
You do the legislative enactment that is going to give you another leg to stand on in case number one, correct?
Correct.
And you're going to use that change of the rules in midstream and say, aha, you know, we're going to present this in the first case because we were effective in getting the rules changed. Right?
We were going to raise it in the first case, absolutely.
Okay, and now you're faulting Rumke for using the injunction of this legislation, calling it enjoined, and it can't be used in the first case. I don't understand why you could use it had you been successful, and they can't use it because they were successful. How's that work?
It works, Your Honor, because of the fundamental concept of the self-executing provisions of the Ohio Constitution and the fundamental requirement that necessary parties be included. Under the Constitution, there's no way to enjoin a bill once it is signed by the governor. It's signed by the governor by operation of the Constitution. It becomes law immediately. It becomes effective, not law, effective 90 days later. As this court held in Thornton versus Salek, there are only three ways to stop the effectiveness of that law. It's going to be self-executing unless a referendum petition is filed, mm-hmm. or unless there are inadequate signatures on the petition and it's later determined by the Secretary of State's office that the referendum petition is invalid, it would become effective at a later date. Those are the only times. There's no way to stop the effectiveness of the law. You need an actual case in controversy. The person that needed to be enjoined in this case was Coleraine Township from enforcing its local zoning under the new statute if it, in fact, was constitutional.
You didn't change the local zoning in response, anticipating the new law's effectiveness 90 days from the date the governor signed it, correct?
Absolutely not. The local zoning.
Do you agree, though, that had you changed it on the 91st day and they hadn't brought their action until the 91st day, you would have had standing? You agree with Mr. Miller's statement that that would have given you the standing?
Well, the statement has a fundamental misunderstanding, and that is there was never any need under the old law or the new law for Colerain Township to amend its local zoning. They had local zoning that regulates landfills. The only question is, because townships are statutory bodies and are limited mm-hmm. by and empowered by the zoning statutes passed by the General Assembly, was whether or not this 519.211 gave a state statutory exemption to Rumkey Sanitary Landfill from local zoning. It never had. It didn't under the old statute. It didn't under the new statute give them an exemption from local zoning. It was a facts and circumstances argument under the old statute. They had never been exempt from local zoning. They were claiming that they had acquired public utility status under the common law and should now be exempt, which never required an amendment or modification of the township zoning resolution. The only thing the statutory amendment did was make it, the legislature made it clear that if you are a privately owned sanitary landfill that does not have publicly published and regulated rates, that you cannot be a public utility. That's all it did. It effected no necessary change in the law because many local landfills already were operating as not as public utilities, and there had not been a case that had determined that one was a public utility.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham.
Thank you.